cliffcentral.com. We're back with Joey Evans and Meredith, his wife, and we put them on the show together. Why? Because it was a joint effort for Joey to complete the Dakar 2017. We had him in the studio 7-8 months ago when I think almost the fundraising really started, and it did seem like an impossible task. They actually did it. He actually went on the Dakar. He completed it. In the end, the only South African with a motorbike to complete it, I believe. And some others had accidents, and we saw some of those video clips. So, Joey, we're looking at some lessons. It's great to have you and Meredith in the studio. Something that stood out for me, another leadership lesson or life lesson, is never let go of your principles. Now, you weren't on this race, this dream race, crazy race, to be a good Samaritan. You know, you're not on that race to help everyone you can. I mean, that would be a different goal.
Yeah.
But still, somehow that feeling came over, I think, for everyone following you, that you did have those special moments where you helped people, probably went beyond, above and beyond. But also there were probably moments where you had to make a call and say, we're racing here. I'm not here to doctor everyone's wounds. So just tell us, am I accurate in that? You did seem to help people, and you have a good heart.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Dakar is difficult. You know, when I've raced in the past, I like to help the other guys. You know what I mean? It's great to be able to, like at the Amageza Rally, I helped a lot of guys. But at Dakar, it is a little different from a point of view that you cannot help everyone, and you are at the edge of what you can possibly do as it is. So you don't have spare energy. You don't have a lot of that. But anytime you come across a guy that's injured, you need to stop. That's part of it, you know. And a lot of guys would kind of pretend they didn't see and carry on and that sort of stuff. But I believe you should always stop. And if you make the call, sometimes you can stop and help a guy fix a bike and stuff. And other times you got to be like, hey, buddy, good luck, mate. You know, we'll see you out there, you know. But that's the best you can do, because you got to make sure you finish yourself as well.
The one incident was it's a fellow South African, I think, who broke his leg.
Yeah,
and that I think that went kind of viral in many respects, and I think that whole incident there shows what you're saying. You were helping, you were encouraging emotionally, you were doing what you can, you called people, but when you probably felt guilty. I sense that to pick up his or to help lift his stretcher.
Yeah,
but you knew your capacity. Your leg wasn't good. I don't know. It was a day or two after you injured your knee. So you couldn't lift that stretcher.
That was terrible. I've got to tell you, that was a terrible, terrible experience, just all in all. First of all, to see David Thomas from Cape Town, to go out was horrible, man, because you've kind of followed the other South Africans with their preparing and that kind of stuff. And so to see a guy go out, and he'd broken his leg, and he'd broken it very badly, and to see him in such pain, and to he's you got this buddy of yours who's lying there experiencing your worst nightmare, you know, and so you can feel for him. And it was terrible to see him go out. And when I got there, the medics were already there, so I didn't really need to help him in any way from a physical point of view. They were already there. They had him on the stretcher and that kind of stuff, but they needed to carry the stretcher to the helicopter. But and they asked me to help carry the stretcher. But obviously, with my spinal cord injury, I don't walk great as it is. Now, it was all in soft mud. You know, the super slippy mud is where it had gone down. That was one of the reasons he'd crashed there. And then I've got I tore a ligament on the inside of my knee as well. And there was just no, I was struggling to walk, you know, at all, you know. And to carry a stretcher over mud with a guy with a leg in literally in pieces, there was no ways I was going to drop, you know, I was going to drop this guy. So I flagged down a couple of quad riders that were coming through and got them to help. And I'm sure they were probably thinking, well, why don't you pick him up yourself, you know? But it really was a case of I knew I couldn't help, but I kind of held the drip a bit, and I kind of spoke to him and just kind of helped to reassure him that it isn't the end, you know, and that the injury he's had is, although traumatic and difficult, it'll heal, and it'll pass. And 6 months from now, he'll be training and he'll be back next year, you know, and you better believe he's the kind of guy that's not going to quit. He's the kind of guy that will be back and he'll finish that race.
And then you took, I think, his brother's sticker, put it on your bike. Did take that to the end.
I did. It was fantastic that I got to do that. He asked me, as he was being put in the helicopter, to take the sticker off his bike, which had his brother's name on it. His brother had passed away in a car accident years before. And his goal was to take that his brother's name to the finish line of Dakar, you know, his brother being a Dakar fan as well. And when he asked me to do that, I thought, geez, buddy, that's a bit of an ask, man. I hope I don't let you down. And so to be able to take it to the finish for him and his family was an honor. You know, it really was an honor.
Another movie, by the way, another story in its own from his angle.
Yeah.
You know, his brother and then handing it over.
He's got incredible story there.
Lovely
as well,
story there. Meredith, just quickly, your feelings as you saw all this unfold. So you're watching from a distance, your husband's suffering, he's living his dream, suffering his dream. And then doing good deeds, doing good things. That's who he is. You know, he does have a big heart. He's just naturally a good person. Even those that I know that grew up with him, sense of humor and full of nonsense, but a good heart. So how did you feel as all this unfolded before your eyes?
Well, I saw the clip. You know, it was, like you said, it went viral. And I could see how much it upset Joey that this had happened to him. Previously, before that, we'd seen footage of you and David about to leave on the stage, and you were joking that you didn't know what day it was and all sorts of stuff. And then to the next scene is what we see is you coming across him in that pain. I could tell that it killed you to see that. But the whole helping everybody, that's, I know several people told him, one of them being Daryl, you're not going to have time to do that on the Dakar. You need to race your own race. And I knew that you'd be incapable of doing that, that you'd have to stop because it's just who he is. You know, he has got a heart of gold.
In all fairness, there was times I did have to just kind of push on. You know, there was guys I came across where they were working on a bike and stuff. It wasn't a physical injury. It was a motor problem. And I was just kind of like, buddy, I wish you luck, man, but I can't stand here and
fix
your bike.
So the guy doesn't have a screw or something.
You know, that's right, Joe. There was one time the guy needed some, you know, like a little, you know, I guess like a bolt for an airbox kind of thing. And I couldn't help him, you know. And I mean, we could have sat there forever and made plan with wire and stuff, but it was kind of his problem, and he had to deal with it, and I had to get going. You know, I had to reach my cutoff times, and I had to make sure I stayed in the race. And so sometimes I had to be a little bit harsh and be like, sorry, mate, I'm gone, you know, best of luck. And it was tough, but sometimes you just got to do it. You know, it's a cruel race and you got to make sure you stay in yourself.
It is a race. It is a competition. It's sport, you know, and there are some really good people. You look at the All Blacks. They all seem like incredible gentlemen, and a lot of them, most of them are.
Yeah.
But on the field, it's sport. It's rough. It's tough,
that's
you know. You know, before we go to some of your lessons, one that stood out for me was also you have to. So the lesson for me is, as you move forward towards your dream, you have to often adapt like crazy.
Oh yeah,
everything don't work the way you want it to, and the one example I think of is when the car drove over your motorbike and really you couldn't go ahead, but you came across another motorbike where the biker had deserted it. He's done with the race. And there was your saving grace. You took parts from that motorbike, adapted, and I guess luckily you've worked on your bike many times. I guess you can't do the Dakar without knowing how to work on your bike, right?
Yeah, you got to be pretty mechanically sound. You know, I'm not as good as a mechanic who works on bikes and stuff, but I know all the basics, you know. And that was a day where the goalposts were just moved incredibly, you know, which is when you talk about adapting, that really is the key, you know. When that there was a car that went straight over my bike. I got out the way in time and he just rode straight over my bike and he crushed the entire exhaust and broke off all the foot peg, you know, at the cradle. It wasn't just the peg, it was the whole thing that holds it, and shattered all my navigation tower, all the carbon fiber and everything was all broken. And I really had an unrideable bike. You know, it wouldn't start, you couldn't even move the wheels because the exhaust was all bent into it. It was done, you know, and I had every good reason throw in the towel there, and everyone would have been like, hey, man,
you did you really think well. It was over there for a while?
I can almost say I knew it was over. It was done. When I saw that bike, it was like having a car that's in a car accident. You know, it's like rolling a car. It was that bad. It was just completely, completely broken in every way. And I actually called my wife on the sat phone right there, you know, because I knew she was following on the tracker, and I knew that she's not going to see me now on that tracker for hours, and she's going to be worried sick. And I thought, I just got to give her a call and let her know that, like, I'm out. But it's not because of injury, it's because of a bike thing, and I'm okay. So don't worry about me, but I'll see you later. And I phoned her, and that was a tough call, you know.
Wait, Meredith, tell us about that call very quickly. Uh-oh. Give us a minute on that.
I like to hear his side of it compared to the truth. But he basically phoned me, and I knew straight away that if I was getting a phone call from the sat phone, that something was wrong. And so I was straight away panicking. And he basically said that he's out, that a car's just gone over his bike, and that he's out. And we both cried our eyes out. It was
she
awful.
Cried a lot. There was a lot of dust where I was. <you know? laughs>
He cried.
He cried as well.
And through the whole of this thing, we've been saying, you know, the catchphrase is, you've got this. And I'm trying to think of how the heck he's going to get this when his bike's in pieces. And I shouldn't have doubted, because you did make a plan.
But that was an impossibility right there.
Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't know that he was back in it until his teammate Walter got hold of me like 4 or 5 hours later.
Okay, it so was, for that period, the, you, yeah, it was for awful. You, it was over.
Yeah,
was
and over. I told the girls and everything, and we were all in tears.
Oh, my goodness.
Got my sister and my parents come over trying to console us all.
It was
awful. Absolutely
what a movie,
awful.
Man.
Okay. I hung up the phone.
Then just tell me how long from there to the option.
For sure. I hung up the phone from her, and I looked at this bike, and I just thought, you know what? I still had more than 600 kilometers to go at that point, you know, off-road. So it's not like, oh, we can push it, we can do make a plan. And I was right at the back of the field by then. You know, there was no more bikes behind me anymore. I'm right at the back. There's just cars and trucks. And I looked at this bike, and I thought, you know what? If these guys are going to pick me up, they're going to pick me up moving. I'm going to be walking, pushing this bike, or I'm going to be riding it at 2 kilometers an hour. But when these guys collect me, I'm going to be moving. And what I did was I took the exhaust system off, because it was all flat, and I took it all out of the wheel and everything. So I didn't have an exhaust on the bike. I didn't have a foot peg on the bike. I cable tied and just made a plan with everything just to hold it on. The broken plastics, I just ripped them off the bike. I cut all the cables that had been crushed and things so it wouldn't short out and things, and just taped them up. And I just got the bike in a situation where the engine would start. And I got the engine started, and I rode it. And I couldn't ride it in the track because it didn't have much power at all, and the track was really, you know, all deep rutted and full of fish and things. So I zigzagged through the bush, you know, keep crossing over the track and back to make sure I was on course. And I did that for probably 10 or 15 Ks. I don't know how long, because all my equipment was broken. I couldn't see how far it was. And then the most incredible thing happened. I came across a bike, the same bike as mine, just sitting there in the middle of the felt, you know, in the middle of the desert.
Okay, who was praying? Yeah, come on.
There was a lot of people praying.
Yes, like.
And I came across this bike. And what happens is, the way the Dakar works is, if a guy gets injured, they fly them out with chopper straight away. So the chopper lands, picks up the injured rider, get him to hospital straight away. And what they do is they take the navigation stuff off the bike, you know, the Sentinel and the Erie track and the things. And then the sweeper truck will come around over the next couple of days and collect the vehicle, because they just sit out there in the felt, you know, they're not going anywhere. And I came across this bike which had the Sentinel and stuff taken out. And so I realized, this is the bike of an injured rider. The guy's been flown out. He's out the race. They've taken his numbers off and things. So it's fair game.
Adapting.
So we made a big adaption there. And there was a couple of local guys there. They were on like really old scrambler kind of bikes, you know. And they helped me. And we took the exhaust off. We took the whole foot peg perch off. We took the brackets for the exhaust, and we built up this. We built up my bike from the spares of his bike, and got my bike working. I still didn't have navigation. I still didn't have a front petrol tank. We took petrol out of his bike, filled it in my rear tank, because obviously I lost a lot of petrol, you know, when all my tanks were broken. And we made a plan, and we got this bike working. And then I rode that bike, and I rode it the rest of the way, and I eventually finished after 2 o'clock the next morning. But I just had to be in before my start time, which was at about 5 o'clock the next morning. So I rode pretty much through the night and got in time, and was allowed to start the last day, which we got through as well, and finished the Dakar.
It's just a crazy story. So it's filled with miracles from beginning to end, and I'm saying from when you became paralyzed. Now, two or three, four lessons that stand out in your mind as you've been, I mean, the post-analysis is always easier, yeah. I guess, while you were there, trying to be present, but you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
What lessons will you now share with people?
The biggest one, and this is a lesson I've learned time and time again, and the biggest one is that even if you can't see your way to the end, you know, if you can see your way the next 10 steps, take those 10 steps, you know. Because if I'd stopped there when the guy went over my bike, my race would be over. I'd be at home now without the finish, and everyone would have been like, "Oh, you tried hard. It was really bad luck. You know, that was rough." But I decided I was going to keep riding that bike without the foot peg, without enough petrol to even get to the end of the stage. That bike would not have got to the next point where I could have got petrol. It was an impossibility when I started riding that bike to finish that stage. Absolutely impossible. There was no way I could ever finish that stage on that bike. But I put myself in the position to be able to find that other bike. I didn't know that bike was there. But I just thought, I'm going to go until I can't go anymore. You know, rather be collected at kilometer 84 than at kilometer 64. You know, just keep going. You know, it's you know, that's all I can do. And so that's what I did. And it was kind of a bit of a case of fortune favors the brave. And you just go until you can't anymore, and sometimes things just happen, and you get to the end.
All right. For me, I wish I can get in your head and really know what makes you tick, that you wouldn't give up, that all these years you've kept going. The Dakar may have been a mini version of everything before, of the 10, 15 years before.
Oh, yeah.
Condensed. You know what I mean? It's an absolute condensed version of everything you've been through, the whole life, and still you just did not give up. And that's faith in a way, isn't it? You walk into the dark, you keep walking.
That's it,
And somehow the answer comes, the miracle, the bike appears from heaven just in front of you, and there it is. You know, use it. So everyone out there, you didn't steal it.
Yeah. The guy crashed out didn't think it was from heaven, but yeah, we appreciate his sacrifice.
So you're not going to get a bill somewhere or someone suing you from...
Oh, no. I've sent him messages to say, look, you know, this is what I took. Give me an address and I can send you the parts. So he's from Colombia, so we'll... We're going to be sending him a nice little package with some bike spares soon.
One or two other lessons that stand out for you before we discuss the personal Dakars that people have to go through. For me, that's pertinent. What else? Other lessons
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, just looking at a situation and not feeling sorry for yourself. You know, when I, you know, after I got off the phone with Meredith, you know, I really just wanted to let her know that I was okay. And I turned around, I kind of looked at this bike, and I looked at the choices that I had. And the choice that I had was I could sit there and be like, yeah, I've been dealt a raw deal. This is really bad. Had a good wine. Sat down and waited for the chopper. Press my button on the bike. Chopper would have come.
Is that how you press a button on the bike?
Yeah, press a button and you're done. Okay. So you press the button.
You just couldn't press that damn button, could you?
Yeah, that kind of, it's kind of a tap out, you know, when you press the button. And I looked at that button and I looked at the bike and I thought, you know what? I could push this bike 10 more meters. I could probably push this bike 100 meters. So I can't, I'm not done, you know, I'm not done yet. There's still more I can do. So I decided I'd do whatever I could. I can't get to the end, but I can still do more. And so it was, I looked at the bike, I stripped off what I could, I got the thing working and we went for it. And it really was a case of that. You got to kind of look at what you've got, not what you don't have. I didn't have navigation. I didn't have an exhaust. I didn't have a foot peg. But I had a radiator that still had water in. When a bike car goes over a bike, to not completely break all your radiators is a little small miracle in itself. And I needed that to have the bike running. The engine would still turn over. The casings of the engine weren't broken. So we still had an engine that could function, you know, once we got the exhaust off. there was a lot that I still had. And so, you know, I kind of worked with what I had as opposed to looking at what I didn't have. And that got me far enough to get what I needed.
Meredith and Joey, I think a lot of people listen to these kind of discussions, and maybe we must make it relevant to them for a moment. We all have our own little Dakars that we go through. You had your Dakar back home here, Meredith. I mean, as I said, that's an interview in and of itself, what the emotional roller coaster you went through. It was almost like, forgive the crazy example, someone calling you and saying, your child died, and then 5 hours later, sorry, wrong child, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
It was that, it died. You know, this dream died that you guys fought for and did put everything on the line for. So can we take a minute on that? People out there, you know, what are the Dakars people go through? It's a personal Dakar if I want to lose 50 kilograms weight, or if I want to start a business from nothing, from scratch, or I don't know, or someone passes away, you know, in your life. Isn't that also the lesson here? Otherwise, it's just a physical Dakar and you learned lessons, but we've got to make it relevant for a leader with a team going through hell of a difficult times. And that everyone right now, if you think of the difficult economy, society, politics, you name it, it's like the whole world is going through a Dakar, actually.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that, Joey, and then Meredith also.
Absolutely. You know, when I had the spinal cord injury, you know, I was in the hospital. And you kind of look around and you got your friends and your family looking at you and going, this is a terrible thing to happen to you. You know, to be paralyzed like this, this is just the worst possible thing. And you sit there in hospital and you look around that rehab center and, you know, being paralyzed means you've lost use of your legs in essence and some of your core. And you look around, you see guys that are quadriplegic where they've lost the use of their hands. You've got your hands. You know how fantastic it is to have hands. You know, that means that you can do so much stuff yourself, you know, as far as like operating, you know, computers and phones and moving your own wheelchair and driving your own car. That's huge. You know, what you've got compared to that guy is fantastic. And sometimes we focus on exactly that. We focus on what we don't have instead of, you know, what we do have. But what I went through was very much a physical problem. You know, like you say, there's guys with financial problems or family problems or, you know, so many other things, you know, that they deal with. But you have to deal with it all the same way. You got to kind of take stock of things and look what you do have and look at what you can do with what you have and then focus on that and work that until you get everything that you need.
Mm. Meredith, we all have our own Dakars, don't we?
Yeah, sometimes it's somebody being so flippin' positive all the time when you just want to sulk. But I remember when he had the accident, I just felt like life was over. I didn't know how I was going to cope. We've always been family orientated, and to not lose the father figure, but to realize that a lot of things that he did before he wouldn't be able to do, it was crushing for me. And I remember my mom saying, take it a day at a time. And if you can't take it a day at a time, then take it an hour at a time and just keep on going. And we did that. And there was times where it was easier for the day to go than others. But the same thing with the Dakar. When I received certain news, it was a case that my mom would say, take it an hour at a time, you know. And I almost feel stupid phoning them in a panic, knowing that Superman over here would have made a plan. But it's to keep on going and to not give up, I think, and just taking it a little bit at a time rather than seeing the whole massive picture in front of you.
Powerful principle. And I want to say this. I think whereas logic would tell one that whatever happened to you before the Dakar and the run-up to the Dakar were all liabilities, you know, maybe financially, your legs, this, that. But in the end, it's those very challenges that helped you succeed. This 1 hour, that's exactly what you did when your bike was finished.
Yeah.
You just went one step at a time, 1 hour at a time. So you were prepared through everything that happened, ironically, emotionally, spiritually, physically, to actually succeed. So if anyone should have succeeded, barring bad luck, it was you, Joey. Easier said than done, but
yeah,
you had the material to do it.
Spot on. You know, something people, something that's been said to me a few times, you know, leading up to the Dakar and things, they're like, guys would say to me, yeah, but you're so lucky, you've got this cool story. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I live that story, you know. It's not, I certainly didn't feel lucky being paralyzed and, you know, in a hospital bed and, you know, not being able to go to the toilet or move or do anything like that, you know. Having your nappies changed for you, you don't feel very lucky. But it's turned out to be a huge blessing, you know, in my life that I had this accident, and it gave me a different outlook on life. And it was those tough times that taught me how to be tough, that I knew I could ride all night. If I had to ride all night, we ride all night. If we need to do 48 hours straight, we do 48 hours straight. We've had worse. We can do this, you know? And so it was that kind of stuff, that it was those tough times that make you tough.
Joey, what's the new vision? So you started this with a remarkable vision. I think of a guy like Chad Leclos that I interviewed, whose vision was to beat Michael Phelps. And in his first Olympics, I think he beat him.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting with him after that thinking, is this young man going to keep going? Yeah. And he has, in many respects. So you know, people like Martin Dreyer, who won 7 doozies, and the Camel, or the Land Rover G4, which is a endurance race in and of itself. I don't know if you've met him. You should sit down with him.
Okay.
So you say to yourself, you've actually achieved that dream, that vision. And it can't be same old, surely not. What's the new vision? Have you come up with one? Are you now grappling with that?
I've been asked this a couple of times the last few days. It really is. It's been a vision that's kind of like been all encompassing. You know what I mean? It's been something that we've worked so hard towards for so long. You know, but I'd like to sleep a little bit for the next week or so and recover. But I don't know what the future holds, if I'm being honest. You know, I really don't. But I'm certainly going to do things different. I'm certainly going to do some different things. I'd like to share, you know, the lessons I've learned. I'd like to share my experience with people. So I'd like to do some speaking. You know what I mean? I did quite a lot leading up to Dakar to help raise money for funds to race Dakar. So I'd definitely like to do some more of that and, you know, share my story with people and do a lot more, like, you know, question answers and show pictures and explain exactly how I felt in these different situations and relate that to people's lives. So I definitely like to do a lot more of that. And I'd like to, and just also remember, you know, going forward the rest of my life, that you're not here forever. You know, it's just such a small time you're here on this planet, and you don't want to waste it doing something you don't enjoy, you know? So I want to, you know, make sure that I live in such a way that we take those chances and we do those things. You know, I have something that I've written down in my diary where I've written, do the things you think of. Because sometimes you think of cool ideas and you think of cool things to do for people and you think of cool places to go and stuff to do. And then you kind of think, yes, I'll do that one day. Do it now. Do it today. Do it this week. Do it this year. There's no reason why not. And so I want to be more that guy.
Mm. Wonderful final comments there, Joey. Thank you so much for joining us, you and Meredith. Thank you. And I know you're not naturally wanting to be a limelight guy, but you've got to capitalize on that. And hopefully you can inspire internationally. South Africa is small. Yes, we want you to inspire. Yeah, let's do what we can to get you in front of people, sharing your story. You've got the pictures. You've got the footage. Yes. So are you packaging that, getting it ready to share with the world, actually? I mean, Dakar is global.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we're doing. We're gonna get it out there and just share these things. You want people to feel those feelings that you had, you know, when you were there. It's hard to feel something when you weren't there. But I took a lot of footage while I was there in the race, and I want people to feel of that and to understand what it was like to be there.
That's Joey Evans from paraplegic to Dakar, 2017. Remarkable story, and we thank you for sharing that with us. We really do.
Cool.
We wish you all the best, and let's, as I said, get you out there to share this remarkable story. Rest well, but then you also have to capitalize on the moment, you know.
Yeah.
We've got to get your name out there so that you can inspire. And let me just say, Joey's a genuine guy. He's real, and I have no doubt he's going to touch many, many lives in the future. Stay tuned for the business show up next with Richard Angus and the team. And please join us again for the Leadership Masterclass next week. Cheers, everyone. CliffCentral.com.